This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 632, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 632. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
It is exactly who you just said.
Yeah, it's you. And we are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite comic. We call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books we read. We talk about patron picks and superpowers and listener mail if we have time. Basically, we try to entertain you and ourselves for 1 hour, which is the goal. Hopefully we reach
mostly ourselves.
Mostly ourselves, and by extension, you.
It's a little concept I like to call trickle-down entertainment.
That's right.
And I figure, like, the old formula is I just need to make Ron laugh, but he's not here anymore. Connor's harder to make laugh, or it's to me, yes, he is. Not in a bad way, but it's
But the thing
way.
Is, like, do you want it to be easy, or do you want the challenge?
You know? that's a complicated question, Connor.
After so many years, you want to mix it up, you know?
I agree with that. Wait, are you getting rid of me?
We have to have a meeting after this show's over. So here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There will be spoilers. Exercise some caution. Use your brain. This is Josh's week for the pick. Josh, you had it.
Yeah, I think I said this last week. I probably say the same things every week. I just have to accept that. After you do something 1,000 times or 632, you're going to probably...
I think we're almost near 900 shows. I looked in the thing.
Yeah. There were several contenders this week, I think, and I went with this one, which is Spider-Man number 240. How'd they get that number? I don't know.
Is it accurate? I don't know.
I don't think anyone could know. I do know that I don't like the font that they used on 2 because it looks like Z40, which looks like an automotive additive of some kind. A little ways through, this is Brian Bendis's last Ultimate Spider-Man issue. Really, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's his last issue with Miles Morales as a character, but also Ultimate Spider-Man as a continuation, which is really where most of us got to know him sort of in depth as a creator. And I'm reading through this, and basically there was a big fight at the end of the last one, and there was this whole... drama with his uncle coming back and supervillains, and then they just kind of stopped it. They said, "Ah, you got knocked out and you've been sick. Did it have anything to do with the fight? No, you got an infection." And I thought, oh, this is what happened to Bendis himself, the real person. In December, he became gravely ill with a sort of random MERS disease and apparently almost died several times. And it was a real sort of like shock to the system, a life-changing event kind of thing. And I was like, oh, he's doing that story here, which gives me pause to think for a second. It's like, is that a good idea? And right. as I'm reading it, I thought, yep, this totally works for me in this context. Specifically with the parts of... He kept waking up, basically. And he'd have some consciousness, and he would see that there would be people who loved him all around him. And then he'd kind of pass out again. And then he'd wake up, and he'd see different people were going to be there. There's a point where... He wakes up and Genki's sitting there and he's like, you haven't been here at all. And he's like, I've been here the whole time. You've been asleep. And they look outside and Peter Parker is in a hammock outside. And they were like, he's never, he hasn't left. And I just found it really touching.
I mean, even take away the layer of realism to it.
Yes.
As a wrap up, it was, you know, it was almost like, this is your life, Miles Morales, you know? Here are all the people that have helped, that have loved you for the last, however many issues Miles has been in the book. It was sweet.
And you mix that with the fact that there is an element of realism to it, even in just like Brian Bendis knows what this feels like and he can put that into the character. Whole thing happens and basically like a big shield thing comes up. He's better. He gets out and he's like, I gotta go do one thing. And it's because he promised his friend that he'd go to the movies all day. And so the last panel, which is a combination of Sarah Pacelli and the other artist, the normal artist is Oscar Basildua. He did most of the issue, but the last issue is sort of them in the movie theater laughing and being happy. And Justin Ponsor, who has also had a medical...
He didn't color this issue.
Yeah, because of that.
He's got cancer.
GoFundMe drives or whatever it is for him, Indiegogo, whatever it is they're doing to help him out, because he's a comic book colorist, so he has no security in his life at all. So if that's the thing that you can help, you should go help him, because he colored every one of these issues for ever. And if that's an important thing to you, the thing about comics is that there's not much of a retirement plan, but the community tends to take care of each other, which is a beautiful thing, which is, I think like this is all wrapped up in this thing being one big metaphor. And it wasn't fully without consideration of taking in the sort of the 2-page essay at the end that Bendis wrote, where he explains it and he talks about how, you know, in the real life, Matt Fraction was the guy who was just always right there sleeping in the chair. and I was reading it. I had an emotional reaction. Like, really, yeah. I was like, I'm having a genuine feeling about this. And also there's the Ultimate Spider-Man started in 1999. That's the year that the three of us who started this thing graduated college. As we did this website, this is the book that has been... We talked about this also with Invincible, but even more so, Ultimate Spider-Man is that book that represents the age of comics that a lot of our lives have been put into, and a lot of this experience for us has been a thing. And this is ending. And, you know, as a person like myself is entering what I don't like to call middle age, but is in reality middle age... There's a thing happening there. There's an epoch changing. There's like, we're getting used to a lot of changes in everything in the world, as parts of the world tend to leave us behind and things change that we don't necessarily want to change, but they have to, because that's what happens. And so this got me. I'm having a hard time talking about it right now, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'd like to mention, this has nothing to do with the book. Apparently in the middle of talking, I opened up Comixology to open the issue, and the app updated. It looked totally different, and I was completely confused and couldn't find the issue, and I was freaking out for a second. But I found it. It is an interesting thing when you consider that this book has defined – and you don't want to call it the ultimate age or whatever the current age of comics mm-hmm. are in, but this was an age that was defined by that. That it began with that imprint and those creators that did those things that had all this effect on comics, and – this book specifically being the most successful, the Ultimates had a big impact on comics, but Ultimate X-Men didn't have any impact on comics. But this one, Bendis and Bagley's run together, beating Stan and Jack's run on Fantastic Four, and really cementing Bendis at that time in 1999, 2000 as, you know, the most important writer in comics at the time yes. of Ultimate Spider-Man and New Avengers, and this becoming a very personal journey along the way for him. Transitioning to Miles Morales and then not losing a beat. It's been a very important book, even if, and we've talked about this before, it sort of lost its resonance when they brought him over to the regular Marvel Universe and it stopped being called Ultimate Spider-Man. It was called Miles Morales, colon Spider-Man. Then it was called Spider-Man.
When they started calling it Spider-Man, I didn't see it. Like I stopped reading it without meaning to.
Yeah, it kind of, for me, the era kind of ended when it stopped being Ultimate Spider-Man and he moved to the Marvel Universe. It's been fun since then, but it hasn't been as special. And I don't really, like when it ended, I was thinking, so now what? Because in the essay, he says he hopes that, you know, Miles lives on and flourishes. But I guess after finishing that essay, my thought was, well, why? Like, he doesn't. He doesn't bring anything to the table. He is not, even as a reimagined minority version of a traditionally white character, he's not as impactful as, say, Ms. Marvel is to the market. No one talks about Miles Morales. He's not. It just doesn't have an impact, and I don't know why he would continue, but that's not important to this particular discussion.
See, I don't know that that's true, but I don't really have any evidence to it one way or the other. I think I was thinking of the two characters that I feel like that, because we talked forever about this idea that every time Marvel or DC comes up with a new character, most of the time nobody cares, and I feel like between Miles Morales and Kamala Khan, those are two characters who seem to have some footing. That others didn't. Now, we don't know what anybody else writing Miles Morales would be like, because nobody's ever gotten a chance to. Same with Jessica Jones. Like, he owned
those. I mean, as a solo book, but he's been in the Champions book. He's been in other. Mm-hmm. He's been in the Avengers book. To me, as a character who's been around for a while in the larger Marvel universe, he hasn't made much of an impact.
I like him there. I don't know that I agree with that. But you know, that's just my point of view on it. Is, you know, I find him interesting. I find that you're getting that kid amongst, you know, because Peter Parker's 40 or whatever he's supposed to be now, you know.
Well, he's de-aging him back down.
Yeah, well, but I also don't even know. I've spent more time with Miles Morales than I have Peter Parker. So there's that too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I what happens to one way or another, I think, is dependent on what that is and who's writing and how it's being done. And I don't really care one way or the other. But it just as a sort of a milestone. There's a lot of milestones in Seals, like, but this one actually felt like an actual milestone. Like, oh, this is like he's stepping away from this more than Jessica Jones did, which we talked about.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of milestone. I mean, life is messy, and it's not easy to align things. Mm-hmm. But it felt like this should have been Bendis's final issue as opposed to Iron Man 600.
Yeah.
This felt like his farewell to Marvel, and it is in that he has a farewell to Marvel essay in the back. You felt, you just felt like, I mean, who cares? It doesn't matter. But
no, and he knows that he's aware of that.
This should have been. What I mean is, who cares which one's his last issue?
Sure.
But like, I felt like I was closing the door on the Bendis era at Marvel with this comic, and not whenever Invincible Iron Man eventually comes out. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that being said, I'd like to read the end of that.
Sure, for sure. But yeah, this was terrific, and even though it was a bummer to lose Sarah Pacelli and Dave Marquez, Oscar Bazaluda has been good. He's a solid comic artist.
Well, you know, he talked about, and I really enjoyed the essay at the end, and you know, like, I think it's interesting, like our relationship with Bendis as a creator, not personal. I don't have a personal relationship with Bendis. I'm not saying it like that. Has been interesting, and it's very much. I guess it's gone through our whole sort of adult, quote unquote, professional relationship with comics and everything. And like for a little while, you know, for a while he was new and exciting and like, oh, wow, look how great he's doing. And then after a little while, I was like, yeah, we know, you know, you're aware of him. It's fine. And then, you know, you have little bits where you kind of don't appreciate him. You take him for granted. And then other bits where you're like, oh, that's the stuff.
Sounds
I like
a marriage.
It does. And that's sort of like it has a similar feeling to that. But without any of the financial strain, you know, and he talks about how over the course of this book, you know, he didn't know what he was doing when he was starting it. And then all these artists and he talks about Bagley and sort of what that meant. And he talks about like how you really want to think about a guy like Dave Marquez, where I've known Dave since before this stuff. And he did that Fantastic Four graphic novel, but didn't really do anything. And he ended up on some of the Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man stuff. And then now he's drawing, you know, the event for Marvel. So you've seen that happen. You see, you know, he sort of broke out of that thing. Sarah Pacelli's a sort of different story, but, you know, she became a sort of special collaborator. And I like when you look back, the sort of epic arc of that story that in real time dovetails with sort of the comic book ongoing story.
Sure.
It's really all interesting as a piece of cultural history to me.
It's all, well, the one thing comics can't escape and probably will never will escape is that the meta-ness of it.
Yes.
Because it's such a small industry that everything is sort of a commentary on itself.
If you're a person like Bendis who is literally putting out, you know, let's just say a story, a scripted story a week over the course of 18, 19 years, mm-hmm. There's no way you're going to be able to do that without putting yourself into it. You know?
Yeah.
And so, regardless of how much people say this is autobiographical, or he's just making it, or like, he's in there. And this is a big change. It should be in there, right? Yes,
he's,
absolutely.
He's an artist, and that makes it artist should put some of themselves into the art somehow, and it always makes it better. This issue was better than a normal issue because it was a bit. It was something he had personal experience with.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I mean, like I can't pinpoint. You know, we're pretty good at talking about this kind of stuff. I can't tell you exactly what it is that made this work for me, but I know that it did. It's one of those like I don't know what art is, but I know if I like, but. This was affecting to me, and it was even before I got to the essay at the end, and that last page was affecting me. I don't really know why. Maybe, you know, that could be a stand-in for us.
Kinda. Genki was kind of the audience, right? He's a fan of superheroes. Yeah. He liked all the trappings of it. He wanted to be involved, but also
there's a whole lot of meta commentary. There's metaphors going on. The thing at the end is you gotta go do superhero stuff. You gotta do the work. And then the thing is, yeah, but I got to go do this fun thing with the thing that's important to me. And that right there encapsulates, I think, our relationship with comics a lot. Like, comics are work for us. We turned it into a thing, just like superheroing was fun for him, but it became the thing that was hard, that was whatever, you know. And then, like, wait, we got to have fun. You show two friends watching something they really like and laughing, and that, you know, that's a thing right there.
Remember, this is fun.
I know.
We're supposed to be having fun here, everyone.
Can't you tell?
So this was there was a lot of interesting books that came out this week, including what was probably considered a pick of the week contender on Monday and Tuesday was The Avengers number one, Jason Aaron, Ed McGuinness, Mark Morales. This is the the new version of The Avengers that spun out of, I guess, that weekly series I read. I don't know. So I am very curious what you thought of this, because I liked it, and obviously I love Jason Aaron. I like Ed McGuinness a lot, but it's sort of spent a lot of time on stuff that I think has been the problem with Marvel for a while, and it made it less fun.
Would you like to elaborate on that before I comment? Because I'm curious what that means, and maybe that will help crystallize a little what I'm
thinking. The opening opens with his ancient Avengers, the ones he introduced a while back, Odin and the Phoenix Force.
And I knew nothing about any of that, so that was all new to me.
Right, so this ancient group of Avengers who are all avatars in some way for the modern ones, and that's fun. An old Iron Fist and that kind of thing. And then we could jump to the modern day in which Tony Stark and Steve Rogers and newly shorn-haired Thor. Well, not newly shorn, he's been shorn for a while, but it still bugs me that an actor's choice of not when to wear a wig is affecting the comics, but whatever. Are having a drink to celebrate and toasting themselves and the Avengers, and there's a lot of discussion about whether or not they should reform the Avengers and whether or not it has to be them doing it or they should move on and let other people be the Avengers. And we've talked about this for a bit, like, especially on the Marvel side, I just really am ready for the heroes to be heroes and not Hydra Cap and Unworthy Thor and Cometh Tony, as they nicknamed themselves. Like, I get maybe you have to deal with it, but not necessarily. You don't necessarily have to deal with it. And I just spend the whole time with them basically having this discussion about whether or not they are worthy to be the Avengers. It's just
in the first issue. Like, you feel like maybe they should have done that in the Prelude issue, then left it behind.
Yeah, it's just let's move forward in issue one and be the Avengers and not, right, now we're all in the Hydra Cap thing again.
It's funny because, again, we're talking about metaphors. Like, if you want the escapism of everything, like, let these people be able to get rid of whatever it is that's dragging them down and be, you know, let these fantastic characters go ahead and be that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you're right. We've seen this over and over again as like our generation of comic book creators has sort of grown up and dealt with real world stuff. They keep saddling these heroes with these unescapable issues, you know?
It's a malaise that's over all these characters that, quite frankly, I don't need in my entertainment.
Well, it's like they're trying to find a way to justify the dramatic quality of these characters by doing that kind of stuff. But I think for one, I did not mind the Hydra Cap story, but I don't want to, I don't want that to be what the character is for a long time. The same way that I don't want Batman to be mourning about whoever died last, whether it's Robin or you know, whether it's Jason Todd or Damian or whoever. Right. Like, I don't want that. Because it is, it's a lot less fun version of it. Okay. So that being said, and I think we're both on the same page about that. I found, so initially I didn't know what the hell was going on. A million years ago, they have these characters. I was like, okay, I get what they are. These are all analogs. A million years ago, I was like, that math doesn't seem quite right, but who cares? just because I was like, there aren't people. so where are they from? But again, doesn't matter. Celestials show up. I start reading the story. My first instinct right away, and I'm the asshole here. I was like, I don't know if Ed McGuinness is right for this.
Well, it doesn't matter. He's going to be gone in halfway through the next issue.
Yeah, okay. That being the case, I think it was a case of expectation. Like, oh, this is, I don't know if this is what I expected to be looking at. It did feel, I'm just going to deal with this as an issue by issue basis. Like, it did feel like, I was like, is this comic from now? Because it felt, because he's got a style that I relate with at an earlier age, 15 years ago, something like that. So it took me a little bit to get used to. I will say, so by the end, I was like, this is fine. I don't have a problem with it. It was just sort of got me at the beginning. As the story progressed, what you're saying is true. I think that thing in the bar, like, I was like, Jesus, get over this. In fact, I don't even care about Tony. Tony, you can do whatever, because Tony's sort of a good cipher for carrying around shit that he has to deal with while acting cool about it. Thor and Captain America, though, let them shine. Just right. Have that be a thing. It's been a long time. But at the same time, Jason Aaron is in the middle of this, like, massive Thor arc. You know, let him do his thing. Anyway, as I get to the end, Celestial start falling out of the sky. I thought, that's pretty cool.
Right.
And I you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about whether I, you know, as I'm, am I enjoying this? Is this cool? And then by the end, I was like, all right, I want to know what happens next. So it ended up where it was supposed to. I mean, the time of it up until now, so you got, like, at least, I don't want to say 36 hours, something like that.
Well, I mean, that's like just scratching the surface of thinking.
It's all the available time I had.
So, I mean, like, I ended up where you ended up. Like, I was like, by the end, it was great. I thought this could have been like Avengers Zero or a prelude issue for a Free Comic Day or something. But whereas we'll get into the action next issue. I don't want to be down on the book. I liked it. I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm excited that Jason Aaron's writing the Avengers. I'm excited to be reading the Avengers full time again, not really counting that weirdo weekly event. I'm excited. I just was hoping to really love it. And then we spent a lot of time in the bar talking about how bummed they were about each other. And I was just like, I don't want that right now. But at the end, when they all form together to fight this, or at least figure out why these Celestials are falling out of the sky, I'm into it. I like the team lineup, Captain Marvel, She-Hulk, Doctor Strange, Black Panther. Oh, look, it's all the people from the movie except for She-Hulk. But
I hate knowing that.
Ghost Rider.
If I didn't know it, like, I'm fine with everybody, but I'm like, it was Black Panther because he has to be there. Now, I know that's not a bad thing with Black Panther, but I did think that, and I hate that I think that.
Yeah, because Black Panther's always been awesome on the team.
I know.
It's just like, you know, I'm surprised I didn't find a way to stick a Guardian of the Galaxy on there. But it's whatever. We're very cynical. I get it. But yes. You can still do fun things with those movie driven cynicisms. You can still make a fun comic out of it, and I have no doubt that Jason Aaron will do that. So I'm looking forward to more, even if I didn't love this particular issue.
I liked it. At the end of the day, I liked it.
Yeah,
I loved it. I'm looking forward to more. I don't like the idea that I didn't know that McGuinness is only around for an issue or two. Like, I don't.
No,
like
no. That. I mean, I'm just saying.
Oh, is that a joke?
Historically speaking.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't get that.
No, I'm not saying I'm just saying it's like when you have a book with Adam Hughes as your artist.
Sure.
You know?
But I want that.
I'm not expecting McGuinness to be around for very long. That's
I want a cohesive run. That's all I want out of things now. Like, I don't care who the person is. Just put the person on it.
So DC Nation number zero was DC's, like, this is kind of where I feel like Avengers number one should have been, this kind of book. But this was their, you know, 25-cent, here's what's going to happen in the next year with our biggest characters.
I completely missed that this was a thing. So,
Featuring a Batman story from Tom King and Clay Mann, a Superman story from Bendis and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, the legend, and Justice League, a story from Scott Snyder, James Tynion, Josh Williamson, and Jorge Jimenez. That's going to kick off their miniseries. I thought this was really great. The Clay Mann, Tom King story was terrific. It was the Joker waiting anxiously for his invitation to the Batman Catwoman wedding, but he's doing it at some random dude's house who the dude doesn't understand why he thinks the invitation is going to come to his house, but it's the Joker, and it's all about psychological torturing of this guy that ends up with no invitation showing up. And then the Bendis story, I liked a lot. I liked his Bendis I liked the story in Action Comics 1000. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, but I like this one way better. This feels like we're actually living in the world. This is all taking place basically in the Daily Planet, in which Perry's giving an inspirational speech to the troops, and we meet a new reporter who looks like to be a Lois replacement because Lois is no longer working at the Daily Planet. We don't know why yet. Mm-hmm. But then we find out at the end she has some sinister motives. She's secretly meeting with some people who want to bring down Perry White and the paper. It was a really fun, typical Bendis story. Lots of dialogue. Everyone in a post, everyone in the paper talking to each other in that Bendis way. And there's only some Superman sort of flashes as Clark is trying to work on his story. And it was just a fun Bendis in the, you know, this is what I expected out of Bendis in the newsroom. And so I'm looking, now it makes me really excited for moving forward. And then, the big Scott Snyder, James Tynion, I think it's Tynion, right?
We decided Tynion.
Tynion? Mm-hmm. Can't keep up. There's just too many names. Joshua Williamson story. I don't understand where all this came from, but it looked really great. Jorge Jimenez. The Justice League is broken up into all these elemental-specific teams as they fight these element gods. And, you know, it'll be fun, even if... I don't really like. I saw that Lex Luthor was on Batman's team, and I rolled my eyes. But
I want to bring up something about Lex Luthor as we get to.
We'll get to him in a second.
Yeah,
but it's going to be fun. It's going to look good. I'm looking forward to Snyder's Justice League book that comes out of this particular miniseries. But I don't understand. You know, it's sort of the same thing with Avengers. It's like, let's just do another Justice League story. How about that? And let's not put. Lex Luthor and Damian and Deathstroke on the team. And just,
well, I mean, like, the fact is that rule breaking of sort of like, what if we put all the villains on a team? Like, we've actually seen that a lot now.
Yeah.
So it actually feels the opposite of like original.
Oh, sure. I feel like I just read the story where
this Lex is like,
he was just on the Justice League like a year ago.
This is like, it feels like we're at a point now, like in 1997, where Grant Morrison was like, let's just put all the superheroes on the team and have them superhero. And that for you was a sort of real renaissance moment. And you're like, can we do that again? Can we hit that reset button? That's what I think you're feeling. And I think I am for to sure. a certain extent.
It's like, let Bartlett be Bartlett, right? Let's just let the heroes be heroes.
Yep.
How about we just tell some really great superhero stories?
Okay. What's next?
That's what I'm into. But I'm going to read all of these books that are previewed in this preview book.
And I will take a look.
I recommend, Josh, you go back and get it.
I'm looking through it. I'll read it.
Anyone listening, it's like, I think it's like 25 cents or something.
I'll tell you something. Clay Mann seems to be an artist leveling up.
Yes.
That's because that's really some impressive work there. And I'm not going to say that, but Tom King seems to be a pretty good vessel for like those people to reach their next step. It's almost like he puts them in a context that's really fixed, and so like they have to innovate in order to make it work. And also like he's done great work, so they want to do great work with him, and it's this sort of symbiotic improvement thing that happens that I like.
He's an artist's writer.
Yeah,
and he gets really great artists as a result of it.
It's true.
But who wouldn't want to draw Batman? You know, it's a top book of DC.
It's true, but also it's an interesting way to do it.
Sure, for sure.
So let's
talk about this one.
Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles number 5. First issue of this came out, maybe even the second, and we were like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And then sometime over the last 2.5 issues, I'm going to say, yes. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, I have the same reaction. I haven't listened to your solo show yet because I only just read 4 this week.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to spoil it. So I will go back now and listen to your commentary on 4, but I thought 4 and 5 were the best issues so far.
I mean, Mark Russell, like, I don't know how well it was planned or whatever, but like he set it up and now when it's the point to knock it down, like it's connecting all over the place.
Well, and also you're diving deep into the the Red Scare, the McCarthyism, the treatment of the gay community. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, there's tragedy here where Huckleberry Hound commits suicide after he is arrested at the bar.
Yeah, the club. I forget the name. Doesn't matter.
It does matter. It's a cultural icon place. I just walked past it the other day. Anyway. He was a key kill himself, and so that this affects Snagglepuss's a testimony. I think he might have been considering, you know, if not cooperating, at least not going so hard at them. But now that his friend is dead,
well, basically, he was going to sacrifice himself rather than his friend himself to save his friend. So whatever that was or that it takes, but he was going to. And then when Huckleberry Hound is out of the way, just saying that sentence is absurd. And that's really kind of the brilliance of this book is that as you're reading it, you're like, man, that's a talking pink panther with no pants.
Right.
And then you sort of
Stonewall.
Yeah. See, I know you've said that before, but I don't have any connection to it as a thing. But but by the end of this, I just like even the I don't even know if it's faux, but the sort of melodramatic play that's being staged. You know, simultaneously with sort of the story that's going on, like even those sort of lines are hitting.
The Heart is a Kennel of Thieves is a terrific play name.
It is.
But I mean, all this, the scene where he's testifying is terrific. And I love that, you know, these mostly dumbass senators are trying to get over on this extremely erudite and smart writer who is just eviscerating them verbally. Mm-hmm. was terrific to watch, especially, you know, knowing the history of everything. And the tragedy of knowing that the lead investigator who's so hard on him is actually secretly a lesbian too, is that's another layer to the entire thing.
I mean, if you did this, I mean, DC would obviously never do it. If you did this as a straight up story with regular people, I would be reading this.
Yeah.
It would be amazing. It's weird. Comics is weird that this is the context in which we have to have this story. And I don't know, like, are the people at Hanna-Barbera like, yeah, man, let's do it. Or are they just like, okay. Like, I don't know I can't imagine what that meeting is like at corporate headquarters.
Right.
Can you imagine?
I guess it makes their characters hip and relevant in a way they never would be if they weren't. If it was just straight up.
To the seven of us reading the book, sure.
Sure. It's hip to somebody.
Sure. This story at the beginning, of course, touches on Khrushchev coming to power, which you can also see in the movie Death of Stalin, which I saw, so that all had better context for me.
That was rough, man. Remind me never to be the best friend of a guy coming to power in Russia.
Good call.
So I think the only downfall to this book is that Mike Feehan is a really strong artist, and he does a really good job with you know, the panthers and cats and things. But I think as someone who's meant to be drawing real people, he really just can't do it.
Oh, I don't mind. It almost feels like Mad Magazine to me.
But I don't even – I mean, at least Mad, I could tell who I was looking at, you know.
Uh-huh.
There was one scene where – and I'm trying to find it. It might have been in the last issue where they focus on some people's faces. And in the context, you clearly supposed to know who they were talking about, and I just have no idea who they were talking about. It's in this one where they show the photograph of the black and white photograph of wholesome Americans, and then the examples of wholesome entertainers. And I just don't know who these people are supposed to be.
Right.
It doesn't really matter.
That's so much the art though. That's almost an editorial and.
No, but it reminded Paul and I talked about this, or Ryan, somebody who, when you were on the show, about there was the issue in which Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio were main characters, and none of them looked anything like the people there.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, he's a really good artist.
I see what you're talking about.
It just
is that
reminds
supposed to
be
me Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr.?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay, I'm gonna give you that. I see what you're saying. It's a valid point. That being said, like, I find that sort of the layout, acting, if I'm not trying to get a recognizable face, I think it's pretty strong.
Sure. No. The art's good. It's just that
I get that.
Not good at portraying real people. That's all.
The dog's paws after he's killed himself. And then his hat,
rough.
The hat next to the note. The note to... What's it say? To God or whoever?
Something like that.
Or whomever, because he got that right. To God or whomever. That's rough. This is a great script. And like, I don't know what Mark Russell's place in comics is going to be going forward, but We need to read whatever he's writing.
For sure.
Not even in comics or just wherever. Like, there's a really great voice there. And I worry that there's not going to be a place for him here. And we won't see it. So that's...
Well, speaking of Mark Russell, he's here in Action Comics Special Number 1. Don't know what this is. Don't know why this is. But it was enjoyable. I mean, I couldn't figure out if, like... So this featured three stories, one by Dan Jurgens and Will Conrad, one by Mark Russell and Jill Thompson, and one by Max Landis and Francis Manapal, which we already read in the DC holiday special. It was briefly in the digital version, then it was removed.
Oh!
It was never in the paper version.
I never read this. I didn't get it in mine.
So that was... I already read that story, which helped me save a little bit of time this week. But here you had a Mark Russell story about a very timely story about the Washington Press Corps dinner in which both Lois and Clark do a little comedy routine.
Mm-hmm.
But it begins with a very traditional Dan Jurgens, Lex Luthor, Superman story. But I just couldn't figure out, like, were these stories they meant to put in, like, 1,000 that didn't make it? Or
I actually had the same thing.
In their drawers they're just waiting to use. But, like, coming 2 weeks after Action Comics 1,000, which featured a bunch of short stories, I was like, why is this book here?
Timeline-wise, it didn't seem to... Yes. I mean, from a marketing perspective, timeline-wise, I was like, is this where we're at with Lex Luthor right now? Because it didn't feel like where we were.
Although it sounds like they may be teeing up things, because at the end of the Mark Russell story, in a not-so-subtle echoing of President Trump, they make fun of Lex Luthor all day at the press corps dinner, and then at the end he says, I'm gonna run for president.
So
happened with Trump.
I'm gonna just tackle Jurgens real quickly.
Yeah.
Jurgens has been writing this all along, so he's been pretty consistent about what this version of Lex Luthor is like. However, most recently, like Jurgens was sort of Team Superman, and the guy came back and there was a little grudging respect happening, whereas this seems to be much more vitriolic than it had been.
Well, that's because it's Lex from the future.
No. The one who came was, but the present Lex was still more, like, all of a sudden he's really mad that he had Superman on his chest or whatever, and I was like, when did that happen? Because I feel like I've read everything. I don't know what had happened in between there that would have made him more angry in the short term.
I think they may be shifting his personality for, you know, the new era of Superman moving forward, in which he's more of a traditional villain.
I find that somewhat jarring.
Except that he's on the Justice League, so who knows?
Exactly. Like, I don't know. Like, I like that antagonism to be a little more subtle, I guess, or at least
t-shirt.
I've enjoyed it that way. Other Lex coming in from the future, he's angry. I think that worked really well. That's, you know, is a little on the nose. I think that's why I like the subtle stuff, because he's like, I get that he just wants to be loved by everybody and he doesn't like that Superman is the most popular kid in school, but they were just like shoving it down my face, so it was a little fine. I didn't like the Mark Russell story. And I got to the end of it and I went, oh, I was like, who wrote this? And then I was like, oh, Mark Russell. Okay, I kind of see where it's coming from. I just think I thought it was a little heavy-handed. I thought the jokes that were supposed to be the funny jokes, it was like Studio 60. You know, oh, it's not actually funny.
But I don't know if that's intentional, because
I know.
You know, Clark is not a stand-up comedian. Although I couldn't tell if we were supposed to find it funny or not.
Right, but somebody wrote his jokes. Like, so his problem would have been delivered, whatever. Like, they just weren't good jokes at all. And I was like, why are the superheroes there? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Why is Batman in the corner? And also, Lex Luthor
Batman
was president.
Never in 1,000 years
of
a crime being gone and eradicated would ever go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah,
Never. Wonder Woman, possibly. Aquaman, possibly, because they're both heads of state.
Yeah.
Never, ever.
Yeah. And Flash, fine. It's awkward. I can work with that. But Luthor was president. It was a thing.
We did that. We did it in the 90s.
Yeah. I remember it quite well. I liked it. That was a very good story. Are we going to do it again and not acknowledge that it already happened? And if so, then why are we doing it again?
Josh, nothing makes sense.
I don't need Luthor as Trump in my story. I don't want it. I don't need it. Don't do it. Back away now. Pretend this didn't happen. Maybe they will.
I don't know. I feel like there was another reference to it possibly in the Bendis story.
Nope.
But I can't tell you that for sure.
So that's going to put me at odds with myself, is what I'm getting at.
And is Josh at odds with himself? Cannot stand.
He does it all the time.
So you didn't read this Max Landis Manipal story before. No. We did talk about it. What were your thoughts?
It was fine. There's a part, though, where Superman is holding the bad guy in the air. Not the bad guy, but whatever it is. And he just says, "It's okay, man. We all make mistakes." And I just go, "Superman doesn't say man." That's what I took away from this.
What do you think, he's more of a bro, dude?
I don't think he's any of those things. And then, like, taking her for a ride in her chair. Like, I don't know what any of this had to do with anything. It looked pretty.
Well, it was supposed to be a sweet Christmas story, as evidenced by the Christmas hat he's wearing. But it's weird. Also, they added the new design elements to the suit post the story being drawn, because it was drawn a year ago.
Yep.
I liked it. I liked it at the time. In the context of Christmas, it makes more sense than in this context of whatever this book is in the new era of Superman. But yep. I liked how calling him man aside, I liked how he dealt with the criminal as opposed to.
Yeah, no, I did too. I get stuck on that thing. I think I might be making up for Ron here. That sounds like an old Ron thing. Like, he said man, so the entire book is invalid.
Low.
Exactly. There's one for the longtime listeners.
So there you go. I don't know why this book was published.
It was weird.
It was weird. But there you go. Now, let's talk quickly about iFanboy and how you can help the show. The best way to do that, patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and help the show directly. We have a passionate group of patrons who have their own private Facebook group, and they're chatting there, and they're chatting on the Patreon page. In fact, they initiated the Patreon pledge drive recently to get this show to the next stretch goal, which is the Non-Comics Media Podcast. They tipped us over 2,600 to get within 300 and change to the Patreon, to the next stretch goal. So if you want to have another monthly podcast from us when we talk about TV or comics, TV or movies or music, I don't know, whatever's non-comics, well, that'll be the next stretch goal. If you want to do that, patreon.com/iFanboy. I mentioned a second ago how I needed a t-shirt. Well, I can get one at ifanboy.threadless.com. That's where I can get my Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters t-shirt. As well as our other six designs, our seven total, at ifanboy logo shirt, our Herm shirt, our Pick the League podcast shirt, our rating shirt. If one is Electro, our GDAT, and our Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. All those can be also gotten in other forms, and iPhone cases or bath mats or shower curtains, all kinds of things. Tote bags. Mugs. I have an ifanboy logo mug on my desk. You can get all that at ifanboy.threadless.com, and we have a couple more days of free shipping, in fact.
If you're listening to this on the day it came out, it's the 7th is the last day, so you probably need to do it right now.
The 6th or 7th. So if you're listening to this pretty early on in us releasing it and you want to get free shipping, you've got time to do it right now. ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can go get our direct donation button via PayPal. ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find all the books we talked about in the Bookplode, as well as a general Amazon link. All those ways you can use to support the show. Thank you very much, everyone who does it. We really do appreciate it. Thank you.
I could have made a case for Captain America number 701 being pick of the week.
Sure.
I liked that we just moved away into a completely different thing. I thought the sort of prelude story it's Adam Hughes and J.G. Jones, but I don't know in what combination.
No. I think J.G. Jones did the third story.
Oh,
it was three different artists. It was Adam Hughes did the open. Leonardo Romero did the middle, who was very, very similar to.
Yes, he was.
In fact, you're right. Okay. To make sure. And then J.G. Jones did the psychedelic 60s story.
Well, then I like the Adam Hughes story. I didn't like the J.G. Jones one as much.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's sort of a low grade J.G. Jones from what we've seen.
Yeah, it looked like he kind of. Using a different style or did it quicker.
The coloring wasn't, I don't know. Okay, so I thought the Adam Hughes part looked great. Captain America punched a Nazi in the box. So that was
It looked like a punch in the stomach, but I can, okay.
My first instinct was, whoa, Cap, I guess that's her stomach, but we need to be a little clearer about that. It was fun and sort of exploitative and crazy. And
I thought this was interesting. The main thrust is that in the future, yes. Cap's descendants... in the future, everyone has a little bit of his super soldier serum, so no one gets sick. Everyone lives for 300 years. They found a way to basically synthesize it, and everyone's happy and healthy and it's great. But there's a problem, and his descendant is dealing with it. But it just, I taking that away, I'm like, what is going on here? Because this comes after another time travel story.
I know.
And it's like, are they just tap dancing to another reboot? Like, what is happening?
I think a little bit of that. But at the same time, and that would be a problem, except I find it's like an interesting sci-fi future horror thing that is sort of connected to Captain America. And I was cool with it because of that. I just thought it was good.
Yeah, no, I mean, the story's fun and it makes sense and I like it. But I just like, I mean, I guess they are tap dancing to the Ta-Nehisi Coates book, but it just, you know. It's just bizarre. It's like traveling through time again.
Totally, but it worked for me. I was like, oh, this is all the familiar things, but in a different context, and I was cool with that. Plus, we got Adam Hughes, Captain America fighting in World War II at the beginning. So I'll take it. I'll take it. It was fun.
Nightwing 44 features the new writer Ben Percy, who was previously on Green Arrow. After a brief stint by Sam Humphries that should have worked but didn't. I don't know why, but he didn't work out character and writer. But Ben Percy, and for me the big story, art by Chris Mooneyham, I've heard his name before in the show, I just don't remember where.
Oh, a book that I sort of had collected and always meant to read but never got to. You talk, I'll tell you what it is.
But he's terrific. He's got like this John Romita Jr. thing going on. But a little bit more dynamic, and he's great. And so here we have a you may get, Josh, why I like this so much, a Nightwing, a Dick Grayson, just befuddled by modern culture. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't like being on his phone. Doesn't want everybody else is. No one wants to talk to each other. He tries to talk to a dude in the subway who's on his phone, and the guy won't even answer him. And everybody in the subway is talking on their phones, and he's just standing there looking at everybody. Doesn't get it.
Okay.
Barbara makes fun of him for being a Luddite. And he's just a personable, friendly guy. He doesn't understand why no people aren't the same. But so, of course, he's going to be dealing with a technologically based criminal here. But I like this new, you know, sort of paradigm shift in Nightwing. The art is terrific. This weird implant everybody has in their wrists, which can remake their physical world around them, so you can make your apartment nicer, you can make your store nicer, and obviously there's some problems here.
Did we just see that in something else?
Possibly.
Let's see. Anyway. He did a book for Image called Five Ghosts.
Did you read that?
Nope. It wasn't the book I was thinking of either. I think there might be a second Mooneyham. There's a Paul Mooneyham, and there's also a Chris Mooneyham.
Paul Mooney. Wasn't there a TV host named Paul Mooney?
Yes. He was a comedian.
Well.
A socially relevant comedian.
So multiple Mooneyhams would not be a problem because he's terrific. And I'm excited he's not going to be the regular artist because this is a book that comes out every 2 weeks. But hopefully he draws the whole arc. And I'm interested to see Ben Percy on the book. I thought he petered out a bit on Green Arrow, started strong, but ended kind of... He got too mired in conspiracy stories, which, again, I'm kind of sick of in comics. But here I really liked it, and I thought this is a fresh, interesting direction for Nightwing after it's been stumbling for a bit.
Just in case the people at home didn't pick up on what has happened, you need to add to the list of things that we don't want is a Trump superhero analog character. We don't want
Trump analogs.
We don't want a Trump. We don't want any Trump analogs of any kind. Certainly not Lex Luthor is that.
There's
I don't need
fewer, like 6 months ago, they were a lot like super on the nose, and there was one in Green Arrow, but I haven't seen him in a little bit. So maybe the people got it out of their system. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think they're just ramping up, especially if they do it with Lex Luthor. Don't do that. We don't want that.
Xerxes, The Fall of the House of Darius and the Rise of Alexander. Number 2, you talked about the first one on your solo show.
I don't have a ton to say about it other than, I don't care what Frank Miller said in the past or what he did. Sure. I'm so happy that this guy is doing work like this that he wants to do. And that it feels fresh and relevant and that, you know, he's turning himself around because I think he had a rough spot and now like he's out there and he's doing stuff and I don't know if people
He definitely had a rough health spot.
Yeah, and
I don't know
if people younger than us understand what a big deal he is.
Huge. He's an all-time great. We were going to do that video show ranking all, you know, the important comic people. He would have been in the top ten for sure, probably the top five all-time comic creators.
Like, he's an Elvis.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense. And I won't ever forget that. And the fact that he's doing where he's not that old. And it sort of seemed like, oh, I guess he's done, which is sad, and he's not done. He's writing and drawing this whole book, and it's interesting, and it's fun, and it's his style, and it's what it's look. It's changed because that's what happens, but thank goodness for it.
Yeah, I'm actually really liking this. It's strong Miller writing.
Yeah.
It feels very in the vein of 300, but still, you know, more modern. And also, I mean, look, the art is what the art is. He's not Sam Miller. I don't know who that is. He's not Frank Miller of 20 years ago, but he can still draw, just in a different. It's just in a different way that still is recognizably Frank Miller. But
it's a choice. Like, he's making the choice to do it this way. It's not because he can't do whatever else.
I mean, his art's been going this way for a long time. Yeah. This is what Dark Knight 3 kind of looked like. I mean, this is his style.
There's an expressionism in it that yeah. I don't think.
I mean, I don't love it as much as the old stuff, but that's normal. That's how things work. But I liked this a lot. I enjoyed the first two issues of this very much.
Yeah. Real quickly, I just wanted to touch on Black Science number 35, which was, I thought, a sort of I keep reading at the back of these books, we're back. And I was like, I don't remember when you left off, and to be completely honest with you, book. I say that to letter columns. All right, yeah, fine, you're back, I guess. I think that there was a big thing that happened at the end of the last one. It brought that sort of part of the story to a close. And then this one, we find Grant and his estranged wife sort of at a place where they're trying to reconcile them. And then they can't do it, and they fail at it. And you find out at the end that these people who are trying to reconcile them do this all day, every day, with different versions of them, because they're trying to stop the universe from getting torn apart, and they fail every single time. And I was just like, God, that's grim. I thought it was really well done and really imaginative. And that's all. Mateo Scalera needs to stop, but also he puts the camera up everyone's nose.
I think it's time to wrap the story up.
Get into that.
I mean, we're in the home stretch. It's what's happening. I'm just saying, it's right. It makes sense. It's had its story. The arc is closing, and it makes sense. This is not a book that needs to go on for a fortnight.
I know everything about Grant McKay at this point that I need to know. Let's see how he fixes it up.
Right.
Or does.
So I wanted to mention Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows number 3, because I'm sure you're not reading it, which is a bummer, because issue 2 and then issue 3 was all about the fallout of relativity, which is your favorite thing.
Oh, I do love relativity.
So in the second issue, Dr. Star goes out. He gets contacted by aliens. He's the first person to make contact with aliens. He tells his son, I'll be right back. I'm just going to make a quick jaunt into space to talk to these aliens. No, you can't come with me. And he goes out to talk to the aliens. He gets transported to their world. And they're being terrorized by this space dragon monster that lives near a black hole. And he's in such a rush to go fight the monster, he doesn't realize in his head, oh shit, I shouldn't go near the black hole. He does. And when he comes back at the end of issue 2, he realizes he's been gone for like 25 years, even though it's been 18 years, even though it's been only like a day for him. So he comes back. His wife is old and they're destitute. His son is an angry and bitter young man and, you know, going nowhere in his life. And this is the fallout of that, because that happened at the end of the last issue. And this has been a terrific story. Jeff Lemire, Max Fiemura, the main character is obviously James Robinson. It's a take on Starman, but they also combine Starman with the Green Lantern Corps, because he goes back to the planet and finds that the aliens have created a sort of Starman Corps in his honor with aliens from all over the galaxy. So it's basically the Green Lantern Corps. But back home, he's dealing with a wife who hates him, a daughter-in-law who doesn't want to talk to him because his son has cancer. It's just a bummer that he ruined his life by going to meet the aliens. Meanwhile, the aliens all worship him as a god. So it's a very complicated existence for Dr. Star.
And I can really read that without having to read the whole thing.
You don't need to read Black Hammer at all.
Okay, cool.
You can read Dr. Star on its own, 1, 2, 3, no problem. It gives you all the information you need.
Let me find it.
And I was reading this, and Josh is not reading a relativity story. I must tell him.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let us move along to our patron pick.
So the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy who can vote to add a book to the rundown every week, as they did this week for Death or Glory number 1, apparently thought we would not review a new Rick Remender Image book.
Where Rick Remender has changed things up, but instead of naming it after a punk song from the 80s, It is named after a punk song from the 70s. So, way to stretch. I'm kidding.
Art by Bengal, who I like quite a bit. Bengal has showed up randomly in places here and there, most notably a Batgirl annual I really liked a couple years ago. So this story is a young woman in the future or the present?
I think like nearish
near future.
Future. Maybe not. Maybe it's just now.
Maybe not.
Why did I think it's her outfit is the only thing that made me think it was nearish future.
Lives off the grid with a bunch of people, a community of people living off the grid. They're all into cars and, you know, fixing them up and not living under the rules of the man.
Yeah.
And then something bad happens and she has to go fix it and it gets worse. Mm-hmm. I'm being very vague, but it's a new number one image and I think
we get the point across. I thought it was it felt different than a lot of the other Remender stuff that we're reading. I don't know that I can pinpoint why. This had a sort of a vaguely Southern bent, I think, and I don't think his characters sound like that a lot. I was like, these sound like Jason Aaron characters to a certain extent. So it had sort of a slightly different flavor. I don't think there is a sci-fi element.
No.
I think I was just expecting it the whole time, and then I didn't really realize that there wasn't one.
Well, there isn't one in Deadly Class. It's
there is in the sense that, like, I don't know if it's sci-fi is the right word, but there's
not sci-fi. It's more like pulp, big, you know.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like a kung fu movie in the 70s.
There is an unrealistic element.
Well, sure.
In that, you know, like that this is a thing that exists. So far in this isn't that different than our world.
Yeah, I mean, she's wearing basically a superhero costume, but
that threw me.
It's basically a racing suit, but just with a helmet. But yeah,
but I didn't.
I mean, the crime is drug dealing, and there's, you know, or human smuggling. So it's all basically grounded. But it feels more like I know we keep trying to assign like genres or tropes to these books, but it feels like a big sort of road action movie. Yeah. You know, kind of like Cannonball Run or Smokey and the Bandit, but more serious. Mm-hmm. That kind of tone, you know, like over the top evil cops and people just want to live free with their cars and not be hassled by the man. And it feels very much like that kind of thing. It's super fun. It feels like the kind of like the Dukes of Hazzard kind of in a way.
It's really hard for me to not search for subtext in Rick Remender's work.
Oh, for sure. It'll come out.
Yeah. I think it's already there.
They've expelled all of it in Black Science this week.
No, but there's a real like, I want to be off the grid thing here.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, like all of this stuff that's happening outside is ruining everything, you know. Whatever it is, you know, there's a saltiness, there's an earthiness here that they're trying to make, you know, attractive. Not trying to be like that's one of the things in the story. Like they're good simple folk. You know, the big
like the folk in Almost Famous, just simple folk having a good time.
Yeah, want to watch me feed my snake? I know that movie really well. Like, and I can talk at great length about its strengths and flaws. We don't have time for that now, but I can.
It has no flaws.
It has many flaws. It is quite flawed.
Flaws are, make it better.
Nope. Although they do lend to its character, I put it in a category very much like Gangs of New York.
No.
I do. You're not the same as me.
This is the kind of discussion we can have in the non-comics media podcast.
Maybe we should do that. And then
we'll do an Almost Famous episode. In fact, if we do that show, if we hit that goal, We'll kick it off with our discussion of what's wrong with Almost Famous, even though I say nothing.
Well, we can, you know what, we should go ahead and record that, and it'll be a thing that exists, and that people, if they want to hear it, just saying. Let's talk about Bengal.
I like this was fun. I don't want to say it's Remender light, because that's a criticism, and it's not a criticism, but it's not as heavy as his other books,
yes.
And It was a nice break from feeling bad about the world all the time, which is what I do in Remender's books, even though they're really good.
I did feel bad about the world, but not as bad.
But not in the we're all doomed to kind of way.
Yeah.
You know? But I like this. It was fun. I like the Bengal art a lot.
I like his storytelling. I like how the action and motion were conveyed really well. I thought that was nice. I don't love his faces.
It's a stylistic
thing. I don't know. It just doesn't. I don't know. But his figure drawing is great. You know, he draws a sexy lady. You know,
over a moat like a bunch of Italians.
Yeah. Yep. He's pretty good. I enjoyed it.
I like him a lot. I think Bengal's going to blow up eventually. I think he's going to – I think he's still – I mean, he's still relatively new. I think after a couple of things, he's going to really blow up. Yep. Let's do ratings. Death ratings. Or Glory, number one. Ratings out of five. I'm going to give it a four.
I'm going to give it a four.
Sticking with it. Yes.
Yes. It's just another story.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can vote on books to get on the show. And you can't vote for trade paperbacks. Everyone have voted for Tag and Bink this week. We say it very specifically in the rules. No trade paperbacks.
We reviewed that.
Yeah, in 1997.
We did it. I'm just...
we were not doing a podcast then. But we reviewed it on the website. Anyway, there you go. Patreon pick. And also at patreon.com/iFanboy, if you give at a $5 or higher level, you get a dumb superpower from us here live on the show. Let's kick it off with yours, Josh.
Eric Firth has the power to turn into a small fish.
Like a goldfish?
Yeah, a betta, something, a small fish. It's not always going to be useful. In fact, it's a bit of a challenge to think of how, but at will, small fish. You want to be careful where you are.
That's what I was going to ask. Does he end up, is there a bowl around him as
Otherwise,
well?
Otherwise, it's the end of a Faith No More video.
I've got a scratchy throat thing going on, so laughing is painful, but man, that was good.
Thank you. Small fish.
So which kind of small fish? You got to pick one.
I mean, I was looking at our betta fish when I said that, when I wrote that down. So like just one of those little Siamese fighting fish. It's one of those.
Well, that's good. I think that's a good act because then he could be some sort of tactical fish situation.
Oh, there's a way to make that useful.
For sure.
Traffic's bad. Bloop, into the sewer.
Does it make the sound bloop when it changes?
When he hits the water.
Oh.
Because theoretically, he won't be fully immersed when he does it, and he will shrink into a fish and then drop from the height where his head was.
I see.
And you want to be over water when that happens. Otherwise, we discussed it.
Faith No More. Ronan Lennon.
You want it all, but you can't have it.
Terrific name by Ronan Lennon.
I agree. I was like, that's the great, great stepchild of someone.
Ronan Lennon is really, first of all, this is not his power, but you just know Ronan Lennon's super cool. Anyway, Ronan Lennon, his car is always clean. Spotless. Doesn't matter the conditions, if it's raining, if he's under a sprinkler, if it's dirty outside, if there's smog, if it's by the ocean.
Someone I know got spotless. A new car. And it's not me. I just passed 100,000 miles on my second vehicle.
Always clean, this car. You could throw food at it and it would just not stick.
Through what mechanism?
Magic.
Okay. So he can just throw his stuff down like people would do with garbage in the 50s.
And yeah, I mean, he could throw food on his car, but it wouldn't stick to the car. It would be on the ground. He'd be a jerk for doing that.
Okay. But, oh, so it doesn't disappear. It's
No. It doesn't disappear. It just slides off the car.
Cool.
Nothing sticks to it. And this is his car. It's not any car, and it's not like, you know, it's whatever car he drives.
Okay. Mark Wood, who I believe Connor and I used to work for.
Oh, yeah, we did. Fuck you, Mark.
If you Mark, happen to be managing director at a UK media company, then we worked for you. Your Mark Wood. He's a semiconductor.
He's a semiconductor.
Yeah. I don't know what a semiconductor is, though. I just know that it's impressive. And Mark Wood is a human semiconductor.
All right. Does he feel inadequate next to regular conductors? I think we had a...
I don't think the semi is bad. I think it's just, I don't know. I feel like, isn't that where like Kevin Arnold's dad worked at a company that made semiconductors?
I don't know, but gave him agita and then heart attack. I know that.
Like if his friend was a microprocessor and he was a semiconductor, then somebody out there knows what this is and they either think it's really funny or not. And I like the challenge of that.
I also like that we don't know. That's great.
I didn't look it up. I specifically did not look it up. I don't want to know what a semiconductor is, but I feel like it's pretty cool.
Okay. All right. So Bryce Carroll, thanks for being a patron. Bryce can hold any book in his hand, and immediately he's read it.
Wow.
Now, he doesn't have photographic memory.
Has he? Yeah, he's
taken like the rest
on.
Of us, where he remembers as much as he can, but sure. he has read the book. He holds it in his hand, it's read.
Does he have, and we really need to wrap the show up, but
yes.
Does he have the ability, like, you know when you read a book, because reading a book is a start-stop affair for most of us, you know, and you'll get to a point where you're just like, oh man, this is great. Everyone should know about this one. I love that feeling when I read a book. And I mm-hmm. feel like if you're ingesting it all at once, maybe you're not getting that.
Maybe. I mean,
he gets the feeling of having done it afterwards, but not the experience necessarily of doing it. And
no,
is
but
that
then he's like, that was terrific. It's the feeling you have when you're done. So
sure.
He's read it all. He's like, oh, that was really good. People should know about it. Sure. But he doesn't have it in the middle of the book.
Finishing the book is not the best part of reading the book, though.
No, but he has all the information.
The best part of reading the book is after you get past the, I don't know what I'm reading right here, and you get that first thing where you realize that you have to stop reading and you don't want to.
Yes.
That's the best part of reading a book.
I had that with the Goldfinch.
Yeah.
All right, so Bryce can read any book by holding it. Bryce, Mark, Ronan, Eric, thanks for being patrons. We appreciate you. Patreon.com/iFanboys, where you can go and join up for $5 or more if you want your own dumb superpower on the show. Thanks, everyone. So I guess we're going to skip audience questions.
I'm going to read one email. It's not a question. Jason wrote in to say, no capitalization or punctuation. Jim Lee is still exciting. And I want to thank Jason for being the only one who at least took an attempt at following up on the thing that I'd asked about.
That's right. During the Action Comics 1000 discussion, Josh asked people if they were still big fans of Jim Lee to write in and explain why. Jason didn't do the second part, but at least he did the first part.
Yeah, it's possible somebody commented on that and I forgot about it, but
I didn't see it anywhere. So
okay,
maybe there's not a groundswell.
Jason, Jim Lee, Jason says Jim Lee is still exciting. So thank you.
Contact@ifanboy.com if you want to write in and get on the show. We'll get the emails on soon. We've been going along in the comics talk for a while.
A lot of comics.
Let's talk about upcoming shows or past shows. Avengers Infinity War. We just did a show on that. It's a couple of shows back in the feed, but it's dominating our downloads. Because mm-hmm. everyone wants to talk about Avengers Infinity War. So we had a good time, me and Josh and Ryan Haupt, talking about the film for over an hour, I believe.
That's a long one for us. I told my wife, these don't usually go that long. I'll be up soon. Not the case.
The raw feed, I think, was half as long as the actual movie. But that was a fun discussion, and I enjoyed it. And so if you saw the event movie, apparently everyone has seen it. So if you've seen it and haven't heard our show yet, we've got it there. Back on the feed, you can find it, Avengers Infinity War.
Speaking of long shows, I had a conversation with comic book writer, almost artist, but that didn't happen, Donnie Cates, on my latest Talksplode episode. Donnie Cates, everyone.
Donnie Cates. Good name.
Good guy. We talked to that show. It's almost an hour and a half long, which, again, is really sort of long for those sort of things, and people seem to be enjoying it. I certainly enjoyed it. I think Donnie enjoyed it. So if you are interested in what it's like for an up-and-coming Marvel writer right now, with a pretty interesting story, I think, also. And he was pretty candid, too, which I think always makes for a good show. Please check that out. I was happy to do it.
So that's the Talksplode and the Booksplode. Both those shows were unlocked by the patrons, so thank you. This month's Booksplode show, in which we talk about a single graphic novel or trade paperback, is coming up. We have the book. We will announce it soon once we have the date locked of the release date. But in the next couple of weeks, this is a very special edition heavy month. There's a lot of shows coming up. So the Booksplode's coming up, Deadpool 2 is coming up, Solo's coming up, and also Batman Ninja, the next animated film, is coming up. So you've got four extra shows coming to you in the next 4 weeks. So it's going to get crowded. We got to figure out scheduling a little bit, but once we know when the Booksplode's coming out, we'll let you know, as well as the patron-only monthly hangout is going to be scheduled soon. So all that information will be coming at you momentarily. But in the meantime, all those shows, when they come out, and all of our past special shows can be found at ifanboy.com. All of our podcasts are there, everything you want to look at. And don't forget, go on YouTube, find all of our old video shows. They're all there too as well. Someone asked this week, sent an email in asking what we thought about Miracle Man, and I just pointed him to that show we did about it, because it's a half-an-hour discussion, and it's more we can do on the show here, so that's probably better for you. So if you want more and you haven't seen our old video shows, they're all over on YouTube.
Yeah, just try to imagine I'm not wearing shorts at any point that I am wearing shorts, because that was a mistake. But it was also hot.
That's true. And you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking the show at facebook.com/ifanboy and following @ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually on social media at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, if you like any show, if you like a thing, make sure that you are the voice of support for that show. Leave a review for podcasts on iTunes, star ratings, things like that. Make sure that people know about it. Better yet, pass it around to people. Use your social media connections to be like, I like this show. If you like that podcast about Infinity War, we saw this, you know, people would pass it around and say, oh, you know, this is a good show about that, or when people are, the response to the Toxplode that came out, and people were retweeting it and saying, please, you know, listen to this if you want to know about making comics or anything like that. That stuff really helps. That word of mouth is really our, and the entirety of our marketing advertising. The days of us being in the back of DC Comics appear to be over. I mean, it could happen again, but we don't even really know how that happened. So that's all, I guess.
Yes.
Tell folks about it. I'm Josh.
And I'm Connor. We'll talk to you next week.
See you next week. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.